Wish we could do the crossover on the air, but we can't, Tim. We cannot. Good morning. Good morning. Hope you're having a great day. I am. Had a good weekend. I hope you did as well. I hope you reflected a little bit. If you didn't, you still have the opportunity, right, to reflect on the men and women, primarily men, though, obviously, who gave all on behalf of our country. I think in the future there'll be more women in combat because they're opening that up. But certainly we've had a lot of women, high profile now, who served in combat. I think of Tammy Duxworth, who's a U.S. senator from Illinois, who lost both of her legs at the thighs down in combat. I think of Tulsi Gabbard, who's the was the DNI, who was a combat pilot. I think in the Army, yeah, helicopter pilot in the Army. So we've had a lot of women, and we'll have more. As technology advances, and you don't need to be the strongest man on the battlefield because technology makes up for the obvious differences between men and women, or it can anyway. And so women are fighter pilots, helicopter pilots, and naval operators as well. So anyway, hopefully you reflected on, over the weekend, the people who gave all. We got a lot of them in our community, or had a lot of them in our community. They're no longer with us because they're dead. They died in combat. Lot of news over the weekend, as there usually is. Sadly, Boston lost a firefighter. We read a lot about him, heard a lot about him on television, and it's an amazing profession, being a firefighter. Think about all the things that can go wrong, tragically wrong. And this gentleman served in the Marine Corps, Kilduff is his name, and he fell three stories in a burning building. Three stories in a burning building. There's so many things that can go wrong when you're a firefighter. Really, just such a tragic loss of human life. And we'll talk with Billy Sylvia from the New Bedford Firefighters Union. They, of course, have their own battles. And they fight fires literally every day. Go to emergency calls every day. And I know this Kilduff gentleman, I heard, firefighter who died in the line of duty, used to tell his fellow firefighters, make sure you kiss your family before next time you see them, or before you leave for the next shift, because you may never be coming home. Something to that effect. Because that's real. It's so real. And we're lucky, quite frankly, to have men and women, like we are lucky to have them step up for the armed forces, but to have them step up to be firefighters. And look, I know they've got a very favorable schedule and it allows them to do a lot of other things on their own, but they're still running into burning buildings, showing up for medical emergencies often, not only for me, but for other members of my family and for you and members of your family. So the fact that we lost a firefighter in Boston is something to reflect on. And they have a very difficult job. And they weren't drafted. I get it. They signed up for it. But I think we should appreciate the fact that they signed up for it, because it's not a job I would do. I don't believe. Maybe when I was younger, but I'm not younger now. I'm certainly not younger or able to do that now. So I appreciate that there are men and women that are signing up to be firefighters now. Okay. Later in the morning, we're going to be joined by legendary songwriter and performer from the country music world, Paul Overstreet. Had a nice conversation with Paul on Sunday evening. And if you don't know Paul, you know his songs. I play a lot of them here. Not necessarily performed by him, but he's a legendary songwriter. And how do I know him? He's a good friend of Lenny Mills. Lenny Mills is in the Cayman Islands right now. That's where Paul is. And Lenny introduced us through the phone. And he's going to join me in the 10 o'clock hour. Paul Overstreet, legendary songwriter. And, you know, for younger people out there, his son, Nash Overstreet, was on Glee. Paul has written songs, I mean, an incredible catalog of songs. And we'll talk with Paul about what it's like to be a songwriter, what inspires him. It's a little break from what I normally do, but I think a lot of you will appreciate it. So check out Paul Overstreet's music. I'll play a little bit of it as we go along. And a lot of it is not performed by him, but by people like Kenny Chesney and Billy Carrington. I mean, just incredible artists. So we'll be joined by him. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Miles Grant. Miles is one of the people stepping forward in Fairhaven to join the select board. Now there's 5 seats and there's some vacancies coming up. People are leaving. People are not running for re-election. There's openings. So as part of my commitment to the town of Fairhaven and to you, the taxpayers in my audience, Fairhaven town employees, I think it's important that we run these candidates through here, give them the opportunity to get out in a long form their ideas, because I don't think you can do that in snippets. I know you can't. So we're going to have Rick Trapillo in later before the election. We've had other candidates through. So Miles Grant will be joining me in the studio in the 11 o'clock hour. And that should be great because Fairhaven's really important to the South Coast. All right. So busy show. Open phones all in between. So if you got something on your mind, I want to hear about it. Certainly, I'm watching what's happening in Iran. What's happening with that? It's very important. We'll take a break and then we'll be right back. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
You drop her down and fish her wild. Pull it up and drift a mile, then drop her down again. He's the anchor man. Years ago, in another life, he read the headlines.
That's Paul Overstreet, one of his new songs, recorded by Billy Carrington, called Anchorman. I thought it's pretty cool because it's about a guy who was on television reading the news, and now he just spends his days fishing, right? Drops an anchor and fishes. It's a really cool song. You can check it out again. Paul Overstreet will be with me in the 10 o'clock hour. He wrote that song and a lot of other songs as well, but it's Anchorman by Billy Carrington. So I had an opportunity before I signed off on Friday to mention a number of our local service members who were KIA, killed in action, and we were remembering them over Memorial Day weekend. And one of my listeners, Andy Nunes, reached out to me, but I didn't get the message till I had signed off, but I want to mention it. There were lots of people killed in the area. You know, I mentioned some of them I know personally that I served with or grew up with, or they grew up with me, like Tyler Trahan from Freetown. But one of them that I didn't mention was Staff Sergeant Peter Enos from Dartmouth, 1st Battalion, 7th Field Artillery, was killed in Iraq on the 9th of April, 2004. Okay? So, Peter Enos, okay, from Dartmouth, killed in action. I want to thank Andy Nguyen for sending me that material and reminding me. I remember that, but it escaped me. There's a lot of things going on here, and so I do appreciate when people reach out with local memories of people killed in action. That's very important. And, okay, 508-996-0500. That's how you can get on the air. We'll be joined by Billy Sylvia in a few minutes to talk about their dispute with the mayor, the fire union's dispute with the mayor about Station 9. And there were some interesting articles, as they usually are, in the New Bedford Light about this. That are worth your time to check out at newbedfordlight.org. And one of them is called The Anatomy of a Budget Deficit. That is worth your time, particularly if you're a city employee or a taxpayer in the city of New Bedford. Because the budget is balanced. So when they talk about a deficit in the budget, and this has been difficult because it's been obscured kind of in the conversation, the budget is balanced, as it always has to be, by state law. Just that the way it's being described, and there are structural deficits in the budget. In other words, they wanted to spend money on other things, but they're making sacrifices, and they're going to have to try to figure it out. So now you've got the city council getting involved, as they do this time every year, with the budget. And we'll see what they come up with. 508-996-0500. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. What a beautiful day it is compared to yesterday.
Yes, sir.
When you speak with your guests, could you ask a question? Because I really want to know, why did they change their mind almost at the last minute about being out at Cabral's fundraiser? They decided not to be out there with signs and all that. I'm really curious why they changed their mind.
Could you speculate on why they did that?
Yes. Oh, I have, all I can think of is some deal that got cut, maybe. But, it just happened too fast, if you think about it. I don't understand what happened. I know from what I've learned on your program is they've supported him for mayor in the past. I don't know if that's got anything to do with it. I'm just wondering.
Here's the thing. The money that Senator Montigny got still has to go back through conference to get to the city. So they're going to need Tony. In other words, Tony didn't know about the budget problems. The mayor didn't communicate that to him. The mayor's team didn't communicate that to him. Nobody in the House knew. We learned that from Hendricks, and other people in the House have told me that they didn't know. And the budget is a vehicle, okay, that the governor has to sign. And so it's a vehicle that you can attach amendments to, like Senator Montigny did. Senator Montigny knew about the problem in time before the budget had left the Senate, so he was able to attach amendments. So Tony Cabral, Chris Markey, Chris Hendricks, had they known when the budget was still in front of them, they could have done what Senator Montigny did, but it was a matter of timing. So protesting Tony would be, in my opinion, short-sighted.
Maybe so. I mean, and I'm not being obtuse here. I want to be clear.
Nice word.
I find it hard, not only with Tony, but all our other, you know, reps that live locally. Isn't their job supposed to be paying attention to what's happening for the area you're serving? And to be, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not just saying Tony, but the rest of them, not seeing what's going on and asking questions. I mean, isn't that what their job is? That's, you know, where I really have the biggest problem. It seems like all our local representation is quiet. You know, It's like they go, oh, no one told us. And I'm thinking, well, but isn't your job supposed to be paying attention, asking questions, seeing what's going on? What else are you doing, you know, 7 days a week? You know what I mean?
I do.
And that's why I'm just saying, you know, it's like saying, you know, like you were a selectman.
Yes.
So it's like you saying you weren't aware of what was happening in the community you were working for. I'm not saying you got to know everything, but, you know, you hear people talk. And so you're aware of some, you know, stuff. And that's the pie. It's like I said, you know, I'm not bashing Tony. I'm just saying all the reps that are supposed to be representing, whether it's New Bedford, Dartmouth, Lakeville, blah, 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 they seem to be out of touch, not really paying attention. Like, they get the job, and then they wander away and, you know, go to a different planet or something, you know?
They wander. I like that. They wander away.
Basically, you know.
They get Biden. They get Biden. They wander off.
Yeah, you know, and you know, but you wonder. You know what I'm saying? Where have you? I mean, we hear that such and such, whatever the reps with will rep out of Westport or whatever. What's that person done? That's, you know, that says, hey, look, it made the page. You know, you hear that they're working. But they only kind of fall into place is after the boat's sinking, and then they show up with the wood and the nails, the foot, the hole in. But where were they before the boat was heading for the rocks? You know what I'm saying? Where are they here? And if it's a case, from what I'm understanding that you're saying, is that, well, the mayor's office or the selectman's office is not having the conversation with these people, then now that opens a bigger problem. You know, nobody's talking. So what happened? You know what I mean?
No, I get it. Thanks for the call, my friend. 508-996-0500. I think the reps, we had Hendricks in the other day, and he got really animated, but he was trying to defend himself and the rest of the delegation, and he gave us a lot of really pertinent information. But I'll give, as an example, he mentioned being a selectman. Selectmen make the town budget. Selectmen make the town budget. The mayor makes the city budget. The state reps and the state senators, they make the state budget. So what is happening on a day-to-day basis in the city of New Bedford, as an example, is not in the purview of the elected officials at the state level. It's just not. The mayor doesn't have to communicate with the reps as a matter of law. He does. They have a phone call every week, or used to anyway, a regular phone call. I could be off on the schedule that it's every week. Maybe it's once every 2 weeks. But they have a group phone call with the mayor, with the delegation. Not everybody attends all the time, but they do have that. Mac Auto Sales. Get your car there, because you don't want to have to buy a new car. Why buy a new car when you can keep yours in good running order? Bring your car to Mac Auto Sales, family-owned business on Rivet Street in the city of New Bedford. Mac Auto Sales repairs all makes and models of automobiles, including the one you're driving right now, and they will update your vehicle for the coming hot weather, and I'm sure your car needs it and will appreciate it. Call Mac Auto Sales and Repair today and make an appointment at 508-565-6221. They're open weekdays, 9 to 5. You drive a foreign car, that's perfect. Mac Auto Sales specializes in servicing foreign-made automobiles. They do a wonderful job with American cars as well. They service the whole fleet here from Fun 107 to WBSM. Mention WBSM. They'll give you a nice break on the bill. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and their quality used cars for sale at Mac Auto Sales. Take a very short break, and we'll be back with Billy Sylvia, president of the New Bedford Firefighters Union. 1 minute, we'll be right back. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see old glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag.
Welcome back to the program. A lot of men like the firefighter in Boston have died, right? So we can live comfortably and sleep at night. We recognized a lot of Americans who died for this country on Memorial Day weekend. And as it started, we heard about a firefighter in Boston who died falling from a three-story building during a fire. To reflect on that and other matters is the president of the New Bedford Firefighters Union, Billy Sylvia. Good morning, Billy. Thank you for joining me.
Hello. Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Talk about, first of all, this firefighter that we lost in Boston. I wouldn't assume you knew him personally, but you know all about how dangerous this job is. Talk about that.
Actually, I did know BK personally, and I was lucky enough to call him a friend.
Okay. I'm sorry.
BK was known very well throughout the state. He was very involved not only in his department in Boston, but also with the PFFM. He was an assistant to one of our chair officers there, and you would see his face no matter where you went across the state for anything fire department-wise. He was down here numerous times with some issues we had, either, you know, fighting off closures or reductions or whatever here in the city, helping us with that, or unfortunately when we had some of our fatalities, line-of-duty deaths and active-duty deaths. He was down here helping out with running funeral processions and stuff. But BK was a great person in general, a heck of a person. We also have a number of other people in our department that were very close to him, including one basically that was with him on a day-to-day basis, him and his family. So it's very tough. It was a shock to me when I woke up in the early morning and saw, you know, what had happened and who it was, and still kind of unreal. But, you know, it's unbelievable, kind of.
No, it really, here's the thing. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you had such a close relationship with him when I reached out to you about this. Please, it's really a tragedy. Now, talk about what's happening in the city of New Bedford with your department.
Yeah, so I think everybody knows by now of the crisis with the budget and the deficit we're at, and the mayor's looking to cut across the city, and he's looking to really hit our department pretty hard. One with cutting engine 9 of them and laying off about 21 firefighters. That number, he said, could increase with layoffs. And also, it's not even for sure in the future that he would, you know, he could come back for more, which is kind of crazy to look at it because we can't afford cuts or anything in our department the way our staffing and our response model is. You're just risking public safety. We unfortunately went through it back in 2019, when we still had blackouts and we were trying to fight that with the mayor. Unfortunately, two residents lost their lives in two separate fires where the first two apparatus was blacked out that day. And you know, even then when we brought the argument, you know, you're playing Russian roulette, you know, somebody's going to pay one day. It's, you know, unfortunately it's dangerous. It happened twice and he still tried to deflect. You cut an engine anywhere in the city, it's going to affect response time drastically. It's going to take boots off the ground. As everybody knows, you can have nice, new, shiny things, whether it's a station or a fire truck, but the men and women on the truck are the ones that do the work, put the fires out, and help save people. It's the bottom line. So you cut anything, we're going to lose response time. We're not going to have enough people to respond throughout the city, and it ripples to the next areas, the next engine, the next ladder, whoever's covering, because then they have to make up for that that difference. Engine 9 covers a large area on the north end. Mm-hmm. You have a number of schools, Volk Tech, with probably close to 2,000, if not more, students in it. Namandan, junior high school, that's probably close to 1,000, a number of other schools. You have daycares, assisted living facilities in their area, and also the next area over that they would cover second to. The commuter rail now, that is a huge issue. You know, it's not a matter of if or when, but when something eventually may happen with that. Kings Highway, the hustle and bustle there going, you know, through any part of the day. If you go through that, you know, the congestion, the traffic, the businesses. Route 140, there was just another accident today with a tractor-trailer rollover. But there's always accidents and things that are going on there. So you close down that engine, you're going to have no fire protection for, you know, a good distance. So now that brings Engine 5, which is all by themselves in Far North End and Sazaquin area. They're going to have to continually come down south to cover the closure. Engine 8 on Cushion Avenue, Davis Street, that's a pretty congested living area with three tenements on top of each other, businesses, the residents, you know, it's very crowded. So the dangers you already have there, now you're going to be pulling them out of their own area to respond north. So it increases response times, takes people away from our response model. And we're losing NFPA standards here. We're barely at it now. So NFPA standard, just for one, for staffing, requires we should be at 4, which we currently have, and he wants to cut that. So you also look at their requirements for any given hazard or structure fires. So a structure fire, you would call like a medium hazard for a three-tenement house. You need, within a certain amount of minutes on scene, at least a minimum of 27 personnel on scene immediately.
Okay.
So if we cut an engine, and even if we cut staffing, that's basically going to be the whole city. Our whole fire department's going to be there. And you're going to have to increase, you're going to have to change the response model. We're going to have to send more apparatus to get the manpower there. So you're going to leave the rest of the city unprotected. And then here we go again. We're going to continually ask for mutual aid, which puts a strain on the surrounding community.
Right.
So just like the reports that the mayor had done a few years ago, the bottom line in it states that you cannot cut. You cannot cut staffing. You cannot cut an apparatus. The ripple effects will be felt throughout the city.
We're speaking with Billy Sylvia. We're speaking with Billy Sylvia, who is the president of the New Bedford Firefighters Union, talking about the dispute between the union and the public, really, with the mayor's office on staffing cuts. How do you feel about the mayor's plan to cut back one member from 4 to 3 on the apparatus? How do you feel about that, Billy?
It's a safety issue, not only for our members. Obviously, we are there. We get our own backs. It's backup for us, right? So if there's another NFPA standard and OSHA regulations, if we have a structure fire, you have to go 2 in, 2 out. That's the rule. 2 members in together. Nobody can go by themselves. While they're going in, you have another member, whether they're, say it's a ladder truck, 2 people going in to do search and rescue. Another member is going to be putting the aerial up with the driver, the operator, the chauffeur, putting an aerial up to the roof to cut a hole in the roof to vent so they can get the heat and smoke out so they can do their search and rescue. And if there is somebody inside, it increases the survivability. On the other side, if you have an engine company, you're going to have 2 going in with hose lines to search for the fire, try to put the fire out. Another the chauffeur pumping, sending water, pulling hoses where he needs to be, and then the leading hose is going to be going finding water at a hydrant, getting water to the engine. Because if you're pulling hose line, you could be without water in that engine in basically 2 minutes or less,
okay,
depending on what you use it. So it's dangerous not only for our members, but also the public. Less people working is an issue. There's less we can do.
Right. That's pretty common sense.
Why are we going to lower public safety standards? We already know that adequate staffing saves lives. He brings up Boston and Brookline and New Bedford. We're the only 3 well, we lead Massachusetts in fire protection standards. Other departments have been trying to get it back for years. Our, you know, the residents, the taxpayers deserve to have it the same. In July, for the Fall River fire at the assisted living facility would make 1 year. 10 people died.
Right.
After that, Fall River increased their staffing to 4 because it's a fact. Understaffing costs lives. They didn't have enough people to respond to that. So now he's just completely ignoring that, and he wants to cut our department, wants to cut apparatus, cut manpower. That's going to affect our staffing, affect public safety. We should be learning from a tragedy of 10 people dying and not ignoring it.
Speaking with Billy Sovey, he's the president of the New Bedford Firefighters Union. What was your experience like when you went up to the state Senate, briefed Senator Montigny on what's been happening, and then he delivered for you guys? Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a shock to everybody, not just the senator, but state reps that we had talked to, because this came out of nowhere for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, you know, on the horizon, maybe, you know, there'd be some shortfalls here and there, but you figured that the cities and towns could kind of figure out with budgeting items, and it wouldn't be a $32 million deficit. That's just astronomical. So as soon as we talked to the senator, he got on it right away. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. He knows public safety is a priority. He wants to, you know, keep his town, his city safe. He represents us. He wants to do what he can. So luckily, we just caught the deadline for the budget, and he was able to get that in. Now, you know, we're trying to inform the public and educate the public with what's going on, and maybe what we can do and what we need to respond and keep people safe. And we were lucky enough to get this $500,000, but this doesn't, some people under the impression that it just stays in your nine completely, and it doesn't at the moment. Okay. It helps, it prolongs, you know. It's not enough what the mayor wants from us. So we're still trying to work with city council, still going to the state house, see what funding we can find anywhere, any kind of cuts in budget-wise, anything that can be done to help get some more money back and keep Engine 9 and keep the staffing the way we need it.
Billy, how's the city council with you? Are they able to find other monies within the budget? What's happening with that?
Yeah, we're working with the city council. They're open. Council President Ryan Pereira has been great. All of our other councilors, you know, we've had regular discussions with them and ideas of maybe what we think, and they got questions here and there of you know, something that they may think that'll work. But we're trying our best to work with them on different things. You know, we sat with the mayor over a week ago or so, and the next day, you know, last week I got on the radio and talked to you, but there's no adjustment with him. He wants what he wants, and that's it. You know, trying to find different ways and work together is just no way. It doesn't work with him. But you know, it's unfortunate. And then again, going back to the state house,
yeah,
it's just unfathomable that these guys, these politicians that are running the show in Boston, they don't even know. They didn't even know about any of this stuff. Right. They were just like us here as a citizen or, you know, an employee, whatever it may be, out of nowhere. A $32 million deficit shows up after you have a surplus, you know, a few months before. They're in the dock because there's not a lot of conversation there, unfortunately, because the mayor doesn't have a relationship. He can say that he goes up to, you know, Boston regularly, and we know for a fact that it's not. Just because you send a letter once or twice to the delegation in Boston to say you need money or you want money doesn't cut it. You got to go and have face-to-face with these people. You got to have relationships. And it's a proven point. The union, our union, myself, our other local union, and the PFFM, the state union, went up there and advocated and lobbied to get help. And we came back right off the bat with $500,000 to try to help the situation.
Right.
Plain and simple.
So where do we go from here, Billy? Because this, as you pointed out, it's really great what Senator Montigny delivered, but there are structural deficits, and this is a Band-Aid is to put it too mildly, you know, because it's not appropriate. That language isn't appropriate, but it is a temporary fix to a long-term problem. Yep. How do we end up working this out, Billy?
Yeah, we're trying to put ideas out there the best we can. We're, again, working with the city council and trying to find any money with the state and our state reps. FEMA staffing grant that called SAFER that we got years and years ago, where when we had the recession, that just opened up. we hope our department is going to apply for it. That has to go get the okay from the mayor to get that funding. I know in the past he wasn't too happy that we didn't get it because it could tie into to staffing that we had because it is federal money. So there's certain things that you have to that you get tied to with it. Our chief does want to apply for it, and I hope he gets the okay for it. He's already getting preliminary stuff going, and we try our best to help out and lobby our congressmen and senators to jump on board and make recommendation letters that go to FEMA. You know, that being said, our chief has been very good with us. I know there hasn't been a lot of comment out there from him. You know, that's only because of one thing. You know, there's a right way, the wrong way, the boss way, and he has to do what his boss says, unfortunately. So he's been trying to advocate for our department and the citizens of the city. He does not want to cut anything. He doesn't want to cut manpower. He doesn't want to cut apparatus because he knows the risks that associate with it. So he's basically, you know, more than a few times gotten told to make a decision on what to cut, and he's refused to cut. And he's made it a point that if he needs to cut something, then it has to come from the mayor, not himself, which is because that's the bottom line, safety
right
for everybody, not only ourselves in the fire department, but the people in the public.
We're talking with Billy Sobey. He's the president of the New Bedford Firefighters Union. Billy, there was a high-profile announcement that you guys are going to do an informational picket. I may have the terms wrong, but you guys are going to be at Tony Cabral's fundraiser outside, not just inside. What ended up happening with that, and why did you guys shift your strategy?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of miscommunication there. We weren't going to picket Tony Cabral's fundraiser or any of the state reps or political people that were there that we've backed over the years. Tony has been with us over the years without question on any kind of issue, and has come out and spoke against any kind of cuts in the city or to our department with it. So I think there was a little bit of a mix-up that, you know, we were just going out there. We were going to go out there to get some information out to the public and not specifically against him. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut it short because I am at the station today.
Yeah, no problem at all. All right, Billy, I appreciate you making time for us this morning. Be careful out there. We're sorry for the loss of your friend.
You can reach out to our Facebook page, and you can see a bunch of information on there, including those studies.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you, Billy. That's Billy Sobey from the New Bedford Firefighters Union. And, yeah, he literally is at the station now. So he actually warned me ahead of time, said that he might get, you know, a call because that happens all the time. All right. Okay. If you're on hold, stay there. It'll be a short break, but I got to take a break and we'll be right back. Stick around. Program. That's Billy Carrington. That song is written by Paul Overstreet, who will be my guest in the 10 o'clock hour. This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and great chicken wings, the best, world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Alehouse. Good day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley in downtown New Bedford. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Been listening to this problem that they have in New Bedford. Anything to figure out how to secure it.
Okay.
All you have to do is get a bunch of illegals down there and say their life's in danger. They'll automatically come up with the money. We did it with the state police delivering pizzas. We could do it with the fire department.
You think that's the answer? We got plenty of illegals in New Bedford. I think there's like 10,000 of them, they say. And just say, hey, these illegals, if they start a fire or get caught in a fire, that's how the state will give them more money, right?
Of course. And they'll be able to, and whatever else.
You know, unfortunately, sir, your phone is cutting out. And I think there's a lot of good jokes in there. When I wanted to hear them, but if you heard, his phone kept cutting out. I don't know if we can blame the illegals for that, but I'm certainly willing to. 508-996-0500. That's how you can get on the air. If you didn't hear the episode with Chris Hendricks last week, I've been hearing reverberations from that, reactions to that, since he got off the air at noontime with me last week. The episode is memorialized as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Every show I do is memorialized as a podcast, which is available to you for free. You just go online. I use Apple Podcasts, but that's just a personal preference because I know how to use it and I don't like to relearn things I don't need to learn, right? I get them all through Apple. It's free. But I heard reactions, still hearing them this morning, to Chris Hendricks' appearance on the program. And there were a lot of verbal fireworks, but there were other really genuine facts in there that I think will help you understand that, quite frankly, the House of Representatives, the delegation, they're uniformly claiming they were not informed that the mayor had additional budgetary needs, and that the House budget had, and I know the calendar, so it's true, had already left the House of Representatives to go over to the Senate. The Senate and the House do their budgets independently, and they get reconciled in conference. So the House guys, they're not responsible for the funding of individual municipal services. Now, the mayor makes a tremendous argument, and the Republicans are making a tremendous argument that overall local aid has not kept up with the cost of living, the cost of doing business, inflationary pressures, and that the state of Massachusetts has other priorities. And Chris Hendricks made that pretty clear, that they have a major priority, and you know that already, for the illegal aliens, for the migrants. They use different terminology than us, and they just immigrants to a lot of the people on the left. They don't want to use the qualifier illegal, right? They don't want to use that. And the fact that Joe Biden, who they all supported for president, opened the border. They actually supported Kamala Harris, who was the border czar, who allowed the border to be open, because she had no idea what she was doing. And certainly Joe Biden had no idea what he was doing and left it up to his staff of radicals with the auto pen. I mean, we realize. And yet, it fit their needs, because what they need is to swell the population, because many, many Americans, high-income Americans, high-skilled people are leaving the Commonwealth for places like Alabama, Georgia, Florida, New Hampshire, even the Cayman Islands. So that is going to cost the Democrats congressional seats, going to cost the Democrats votes in the Electoral College that they traditionally count as theirs. Massachusetts reliably votes for the Democrat nominee for president. Because of gerrymandering, you have no congressional membership from the Republican Party coming out of Massachusetts. So any losses in population, which then cause losses in apportionment for congressional districts, is a loss for the Democrat Party. Okay? So they realized at this point they could not trap American citizens from leaving the Commonwealth, but they could make up for the population loss by bringing in illegal aliens and other migrants into the Commonwealth and beating their third world conditions by giving them free hotel rooms and DoorDash, laundry service, medical service, all kinds of really nice benefits. Literally, there was an illegal alien getting dialysis services locally. And the only reason we know about it is the illegal alien benefactors were bragging about it to the New Bedford Light, the New Bedford Light actually gave the illegal alien a fake name. They ran the stories with a fake name for the illegal alien. His real name, I know it, because one of the members of the delegation told me his name. It didn't matter to me what his name was. I could care less. But he's gone now. He was deported. But he was getting dialysis treatment. He wasn't paying for that. You were paying for it. The Commonwealth was paying for it. He was on the...